Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today on the other line is a writer for FearTheSword.com. You can find him on Twitter at MZevgano11. It's Mike Zevgano. Mike, what's going on?
Not too much, man. Just trying to fight off the Sunday scaries and figured doing the pod would be a helpful way to do that. So here we are.
I'm probably just impeding you from doing actual productive things with your life. Like, that's probably what I'm doing by sending you a Twitter message and saying, like, hey, do you want a podcast about basketball? And that's probably, I'm just ruining your Sunday productivity.
There was no Sunday productivity today, so.
Yep, we're like the Cleveland Browns in that way. But today's show, it is the mailbag. We're going to open it up. We got a ton of great questions. As always, you can send them in for next week's mailbag at lockedoncavs@gmail.com and at lockedoncavs on Twitter, and there will be a post up on Reddit. But, Mike, before we get into that, the Cavs-Mavs, they win on Saturday. They beat the Dallas Mavericks. LeBron James committed murder on Dirk Nowitzki, and they look like an actual NBA team. What is one thing from that game that stood out to you?
I think that one of the biggest positives is just it looks like J.R. Smith is finally getting back to being close to J.R. Smith. He's now shooting 50% from three over his last six games. He was 4-9 against the Mavericks. I really like the nine attempts. There was a point where it almost seemed like he had kind of lost some of his confidence and he was a little bit hesitant to shoot. So the fact that he's getting shots up again and making them at a higher rate, I think, is something that's a positive trend that you hope will carry forward.
I think that's good, too. 10 first-quarter points for J.R. Smith. He looks in rhythm. That's a really big thing for him. It's something Dwayne Wade talked about with him in that J.R. maybe was out of rhythm. That was kind of the same thing that was plaguing Wade. My thing is, I think in the second half, Jay Crowder was excellent, and this might have been his best game as a Cav. You can look at his shooting numbers and be a little bit concerned, and I think that's fair. He didn't hit threes in this game. 4-13 from the field, 1-6 from three is not particularly good. But if you look at the starters overall, 35 minutes for him, he had a plus 9, had 7 rebounds, had 3 assists, got to the line 6 times, made all of his 6 free throws, scored 15 points. I really liked how he just decided, I'm not just going to settle for threes, I'm going to attack, I'm going to drive. And he was really good on defense on Harrison Barnes, was very physical with Barnes. And he also set a very, very good screen at Wesley Matthews. Wesley Matthews was incredible defending LeBron, really. Like, really put in work at defending LeBron in this game. Jay Crowder set a screen on him that freed up LeBron, as I alluded to just go nuclear on Dirk Nowitzki in space. If you go, I wrote about this at Fear the Sword, you can look at the clip of this. Wesley Matthews is just visibly freaking out after the switch happens. He's freaking out and just has his arms behind his head, and it's just like, no, like, how, like, just freaking out. Jay Crowder made that possible with this excellent screen. He's still finding his rhythm. He still kind of feels like there's something off with him. I thought the second half in particular was the best he's looked.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the six free throw attempts are a positive indicator, as you said, of not settling for the three ball. If you're Jay Crowder and the Mavericks are guarding you with Dirk, at this point in time, I feel like you have to take that in some way as a disrespect, especially because Rick Carlisle is your former coach. And so it was good to see, Crowder use his obvious speed advantage and actually get into the paint as opposed for just settling from threes when, it was clear that his shot wasn't falling. But, as I said, I mean, you could see some of the possessions to start the third quarter when Kevin Love really got going. The Cavs did a good job of getting Dirk switched on to Love, and you could obviously see why the Mavericks weren't interested in starting the game out that way, because Kevin Love just really took it to Dirk both on the post and then also on the offensive glass. So they tried to keep Dirk on Crowder, and I thought he did a good job of actually putting the ball on the deck.
Kevin Love in this game also excellent, that we cannot really say that enough. He was very dominant when they kind of ran the offense through him, rebounded really well, fought on defense again, had the best plus minus on the team in 36 minutes. More of this from Kevin Love would be a really, really good thing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Again, we're going to dive into the mailbag. First question we have is going to probably be one that will be a shorter answer and this one will interesting one. It's an interesting question because I've got it a couple times, but David Cinco via email asked, he says, love the pod, thank you. My question is, Greg Monroe or Joel Okafor worth a shot And if so, who do we cut? So I'm gonna cede the floor to you on this one first, Mike. What do you think about Jahlil Okafor or Greg Monroe potentially being a Cav?
As much as I do like the concept of vegan Ja living here in Philly, I do see a decent amount of Sixers games, and Jahlil Okafor is definitely would not be an option for me. He's just, you know, he's a guy that doesn't really provide anything besides offense, no defense, no rebounding. Those are the Cavs' biggest struggle areas, and I certainly don't think that he would help them in any way with those things. And as far as Greg Monroe, I think he kind of falls into the same category, although he is better than Jahlil Okafor. He's another guy that's really an offense-only big, and a big that's not going to stretch out at all. So he's basically kind of more of a post-up threat for second units, which I just don't think really meshes into what this team wants to do. And so I would personally think that passing on both of them is the right move for the Cavs.
I agree. I think Okafor is not someone I'll give up an asset for. That's just my thing. I if he got bought out, I would, you know, you'd have to talk about it at least, because he does have some up. I think he could be rehabilitated if the right situation presented itself. I don't think the Cavs are that. I would rather have Zizic if you're going to have a young center prospect. I would rather have Ante Zizic. I think with Monroe, I wouldn't trade for him. I wouldn't try to do something where you're trying to acquire him. The salaries in itself is messy to get him from Phoenix. If he got bought out and he moved on, maybe I'd think about it, but I don't think you flip him. And there was a column today that someone said they should flip Tristan Thompson for Greg Monroe. That to me is just ridiculous if you think about what they both provide in this NBA. And the idea that Tristan is somehow being like too Hollywood because he's dating a Kardashian, that is some kind of frankly sexist and ridiculous nonsense, just to kind of put that at him dating a Kardashian. Just like, let the guy live. But I don't see the upside to it. Like, Monroe could like give you scoring, but that's not really this team's problem, and I don't think either of these guys solves a problem. And the Cavs have them, but like, I don't think these guys actually fix them.
Right, I agree. And talking, you know, more generally about the buyout market is that, you know, the Celtics are probably going to have the pick of the litter in terms of that market whenever it does become available, just because of the hardship exception of $8.4 million that they did get for Gordon Hayward. So, you know, if a guy like a Monroe becomes available, you would have to think that Boston has the most money that they could potentially offer of any contending team. And I don't know if he would be a fit there either. I know that some people have discussed both him and Okafor in that situation, but I think that their backup bench bigs, Daniel Tice and Baines, I guess, whatever role you see him in, have kind of given them more than people expected they would have. So I'm not sure if either of those guys might be a fit in Boston, but I think that they will kind of be in the driver's seat in terms of at least monetary offerings on the buyout market.
Yeah, and the Cavs, I think, could court somebody, but the one thing to note, and so we're going to get to this later too, but last year they had that open roster spot. This year they would have to eat some salary. Do they have the willingness to take the loss on a Jose Calderon or someone like that? Next question comes from LeBron. Keep LeBron at Keep LeBron Trades. He writes, do you think LeBron, Love, Green, Korver, and Shumpert is a better starting lineup for the Cavs until IT comes back? Provides the energy needed to start games, and they're actually the top five Cavs players in regards to PER thus far this year. So, Mike, what do you think of that starting lineup that would put Derrick Rose on the bench?
I've seen some people think that it's a good idea to start Kyle Korver. I tend to believe that is not the case. If you look at how Korver plays on the defensive end, he's an intelligent team defender, but his lack of athleticism at this point really leads to him being exploited in one-on-one situations. Right now, he plays more against backups, and guys are still able to take him to the rack. And I just would have nightmares thinking about Kevin Love and Kyle Korver in the pick and roll against you know, lead guards. So I think that even though he does provide the spacing element with his gravity, he's giving up a lot of points on the other end, even though he does help out the offense significantly. So I wouldn't be moving to any starting lineup that has Kyle Korver playing probably 15 to 20 minutes a night against lead ball handlers, because I think that that could be disastrous for a defense that already is the worst in the NBA.
I do like the idea of Iman Shumpert starting, though. I do like what we've seen from him as a cutter, as a defender when he started for Derrick Rose. I would be on board with that. I think the Rose fit is just, it's problematic. I know people have gotten mad at me, and you know this as well. People get very defensive with Derrick Rose. I think Shumpert kind of just fits what they need from there right now. It's not perfect, but I do think it's something that does make sense. I would so consider starting Shumpert going forward. Before we go on to the next question, a reminder that you can find all of the Locked On Podcast Network shows in one feed. Go to Stitcher's Locked On Podcasts on iTunes. You can find them all in one NBA feed. That's how I get listened to the pod. So, like, for this week, I'll be listening to the Knicks pod, the Hornets pod, and the Clippers pod to make sure I know what's going on with those next three Cavs opponents. It's a great way to get up to date on all these teams that the Cavs are going to be facing, and you can do it in one community feed so you never miss an episode. So, Mike, next question comes from Twitter. It's from JimRun85. He asked, why do you think Coach Lou didn't follow through given Chetty and Zizic minutes? I'll say this, I don't think he totally trusts either of them, and I think you saw him go to a playoff rotation, a 8-man rotation, really the last few games, instead of going to the young guys. I think he likes what Chetty brought in that game where he played 10 minutes. I don't think he just trusts them, and I think he's trying to get something where when he does have everyone back, you see the guys that are actually playing getting minutes. That's the only read I have on it.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that, you know, if this team was 8-5 or 9-4 or something along those lines, that you might see these guys getting more minutes. But just with the slow start out of the gate, and, you know, with all the players that the Cavs have been working to integrate in terms of, you know, Green, Wade, Crowder, and Derrick Rose, all the new faces, it just makes it difficult to find time for these guys on a team that's not exactly come out of the gates extremely hot. So I think that it's difficult to find spots in close games for these guys. If the Cavs are involved in, you know, more games where they're up by 15 or 20 points, I'm sure that they'll get minutes. But just with the juggling all the new faces and trying to get, you know, the Cavs, as you said, like 8-9 man playoff rotation accustomed to each other, it's difficult to then be slotting in a guy like Zizic or a guy like Chetty, especially when I think Zizic has looked really, really bad. So it's just too much of a negative for a team that hasn't been, you know, winning a ton of games.
Yeah, Zizic has been just not good. He looks just a little bit overwhelmed, and I think he looked like that in summer league as well, and that maybe should be a concern, but we'll see where it goes. I think Osman could deserve some minutes. I think he provides energy, but I don't think he's going to be in a playoff rotation this year, and I think that kind of eliminates him from potential moves and from potential minutes. And I think the organization values him. Kobe Altman, remember, is the one who scouted him, but it's not, I don't think he's in their plans right now. And I think he does look a little bit deer in the headlights when he has played so far. And I think that it's not like he's gone out there and blown away, right? Like, he's not been Jason Tatum or 80% of Jason Tatum. He's looked a little bit overwhelmed when he's got on the floor. The next question is from Hansik on Reddit. He writes, how many roster moves do the Cavs need to make to create their best possible roster? What's the next roster move the Cavs should make outside of adding Isaiah in December/January? Is it adding a shot blocker like Nerlens Noel a possibility? So, Mike, I'll see the floor to you on this. The two things listeners should know about Noel trade. Number one, that he cannot be traded till December 15th because of when he signed his contract. Or I might have the day wrong, but it's sometime in December. And number two, he is in a weird situation where he would have to basically approve the trade and then waive his bird rights to make this trade go through. That means if he were to go to Cleveland, the Cavs would not be able to go over to the cap to sign him next year. That could be really problematic in bringing him back, depending on how everything goes and whatnot. He is a clutch client with LeBron in them that he signed with Rich Paul and them this summer. And he is someone that is going to be in a position that's going to have a lot of guys at it next summer. So you conceivably could get him back at a relatively low price. it's a little more complicated than the fact that he does fit into a trade exception the Cavs have. This thing is a very interesting situation, and it wouldn't shock me if he gets moved. I just don't know if the Cavs are a team to do it.
Yeah, this is honestly one of the most perplexing situations, I would say, across the league right now, especially after Eric Bledsoe has been moved. You see Nerlens Noel take a DNP coach's decision in back-to-back nights, first against the Cavs and then also tonight against the Thunder. And Rick Carlisle literally played every guy on his roster tonight, including Jeff Withey, who I didn't even know was on their team. Before even turning to Noel. So before that, I think he logged 6 minutes. He's now playing like, if he's getting off the bench, he's only playing 10 to 12 minutes a night. So the situation there is definitely one to monitor. As you say, I don't know necessarily if Cleveland is the best option. I think it would be a place where he could potentially showcase some of his abilities, just because there would be a defined role for him in terms of being, the center, whether if somehow a move happened quickly, that he could be, a decent option, especially with the Cavs working Tristan back off of the injury. But, as you say, it might not be the best move for him, but I'm sure, if I were in his situation, at least I'm sure that he's thinking that he wants to get out of there. So I wouldn't be surprised if once he's able to be traded, that he would be looking to be moved somewhere. It just, who knows if Cleveland is the right place, or if the Cavs have the type of assets that would entice a Mavericks team that seems to be pretty clearly tanking at this point.
I don't hate the idea of Noel. I think you would have to develop him. I think, he's not like the idea of him is amazing. The reality of him is not necessarily that. So we'll have to see how he does look. Let's say he goes to a better situation. And I think there is something to be said that if you put him in Cleveland, he does have a defined role, right? Like, he does end up in a situation where the Cavs can just let him defend the rim and roll. And, like, that could be effective, especially with shooting. But to answer the other half of this question, I don't know exactly how many the number of moves it would be, but if I were the Cavs, I'd be trying to find a wing on the buyout market. That would probably be my number one thing, is to just get some wing depth. Sure, rim protection would be number two, so maybe Noel solves that. So that would be my thing. And maybe it's just the one move. Maybe it is just rim protection, because maybe you trust in your wing depth, and that has kind of been a strength for them this year, especially when LeBron's going to be playing so many minutes anyway, and Crowder's going to be playing so many minutes anyway. So maybe it's just one move, and maybe it's just getting rid of Jose Calderon at some point this season.
Are we barred from saying cutting Derrick Rose?
I don't think that I look. Okay, we're just gonna get this out on the floor now. I think Derrick Rose is a objectively awful fit. I've said on the show several times already that I think he doesn't totally seem like he fills a need in a vacuum when Isaiah and Dwayne Wade are healthy in a few months. I think that's a very, and he just hasn't been good. He's scored, and I think he's done okay in that aspect. His points per game number is good, but he's averaging more turnovers than assists. And I think he hasn't shown me enough to make me think he's part of a good playoff rotation. I just also don't think they'll cut him. Like, I just think, like, the only way he gets cut is that if he has a serious injury, and we're in a situation right now where he hasn't stayed healthy already this year. So maybe that happens.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm always worried about the wings, just because if you end up getting to the NBA finals like you expect to, you're going to have to deal with Golden State, who has the best wings in basketball. So adding wing depth is always something that I look at. But when you look at where this team's at right now, I do think that the opportunity to add a big man who provides some rebounding and defense off the bench that Ty Lue trusts is something that does intrigue me. It's pretty clear, spoke about, that he doesn't trust Zizic. He doesn't really seem to want to go to Channing Frye almost ever so far this year. Frye will get some first half minutes in the games that he does play, but he really doesn't play in the second half at all. And so with those two guys kind of on the shelf, the Cavs have been playing a lot of either Jeff Green or LeBron at center, depending on who you want to, you know, say is playing the center in those lineups. And obviously getting Tristan back will help a little bit in terms of that, but you really don't have a third big that's giving you some depth. And you saw it in the Houston game where the Cavs got really crushed on the offensive glass, just in terms of giving up a bunch of offensive rebounds. And that was also something that Salah Mejri did a good amount in the first half yesterday, was just getting on the offensive glass and creating extra opportunities. So I do think that there could be some value in a guy who's going to come off the bench and play maybe 15 or 20 minutes or something and just give you some rebounding and some defensive effort. I'm not entirely sure who that guy would be, but that might be something that would be interesting in terms of just getting another guy in there high loot trust.
I like that. And we do know that Lou does tend to favor guys that he does empirically believe in. That is just something he does. That is something Ty Lue has definitely seemed to value in when he's building his rotations. It's why Jeff Green, I think he trusts him from the get-go over a younger player or over some of the other guys. He connects with that guy and knows him. Before we can continue here, as a reminder, we have a contest going on right now. If you go on iTunes and you leave a 5-star rating and review, then you send a screenshot of said review to lockdowncavs@gmail.com. You will be entered to win either a copy of The Blueprint by Jason Lloyd, or you are entered to win a t-shirt that is from Breaking Tea. It is the Mood t-shirt that we have up on the site right now. You can find a link to that in the show notes as well if you just want to buy it and support the site. But if you enter the contest, one person will get the book, one person will get the t-shirt. End of the day on Friday, winners announced next Monday, so get those in, send an email, and you could win something cool and just support the podcast along the way. And the book's really good, and you can listen to the podcast today with Jason Lloyd about it if you're so inclined, because I enjoyed that podcast, and I think it'll make you want to buy the book even if you don't win. Next question comes from Reddit as well. And we get a lot of questions about the Nets pick here, and I understand why, but we're going to answer this. We got two questions about this, but we'll say from Yas We Can on Reddit, what are the chances of trading the Brooklyn pick by the deadline, and who would we target? And so we've had some other questions about, like, you know, should the Cavs target Marc Gasol and other things like that, but what would you say about the Nets? Because what kind of player would be worth dealing that pick for?
It's hard to say, because, you know, you look at everything right now, and the teams that people continuously mention, whether it is Marc Gasol or DeMarcus Cousins, I've heard some DeAndre Jordan, I think, as well. None of these teams are really out of it or anything by any means. The Pelicans have looked excellent when Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins share the floor. Memphis got off to an extremely hot start, and before the injuries that have kind of ravaged the Clippers of late, they are playing pretty well. So it obviously takes two teams to trade, and even if the Cavs were looking to deal the Brooklyn pick, which I don't think that they are, I haven't heard anything that would make me think that they are. I wouldn't assume that any of these teams are looking to move the guys that people constantly talk about as potential targets.
And those guys are all star-level players, right? Like, Marc Gasol has been really good this year, and DeAndre Jordan is very good. And those things are tricky, and you're right, it takes two teams. And just again, this Nets pick is in a weird space, because I think the value is probably lower on it than it would have been a year ago. If you just look at the Tankathon.com, has a draft lottery simulator that they update constantly. And right now, that pick has the seventh best odds of being the number one pick. So Dallas is the worst team in the league, then Atlanta, then Chicago, then Sacramento, then Phoenix, then the Lakers pick, which is owned by the Sixers, depending on where it falls, I think, and then the Nets pick would go to the Cavs. That is seventh right now, with 5.3% of landing number one. I don't know for teams that are trying to win right now, if that gets you in a conversation for somebody like a Marc Gasol or like that. And I also just don't think the Cavs are going to trade it unless they know LeBron's coming back. Like, I know everyone wants to do the boogie thing. The Pelicans are kind of hanging in there right now. They're really, really good when Boogie and Brow are on the floor together. I have a hard time seeing them trading that pick. So,
yeah,
we will see where this heads up. But
no, I think, too, that both in terms of, you know, the Nets have looked better than probably some people expected. And just with the changes in the lottery not going effect into next year, it really does give some of these teams at the bottom who own their own picks significant incentive to tank, because this is really the last year where you can kind of control your destiny a bit more. So when you look at the Nets as a team who has a bunch of young guys and doesn't have any incentive to kind of shut anybody down, that pick might be a little bit higher than people were expecting. And when you take into account the uncertainty surrounding that, and then just the fact that if you're trading with any of these teams that have been mentioned, it kind of, you know, triggers a change in direction for them. Like if you were to look at trading with, say, Memphis, you know, this is a team that's gone to the playoffs a bunch of years in a row. If they were trading Marc Gasol, that would be a total change of direction for them. That would essentially suggest that they're looking to rebuild and basically rejigger what their franchise has looked like over the past few years. So I think that's a bigger decision than maybe some people realize, just in terms of if they're going to move a player of that stature and take on a young guy in the form of the Brooklyn pick, that it's basically saying to your fans that you're going into rebuilding mode. And I think that would be a difficult decision for some of these teams to make, at least like in the middle of the season.
Yeah, 100% I agree with that. Next question comes from Scott Revita at Scott Revita 23 on Twitter. He asks, do you think there's anyone besides Boogie or the Cavs could realistically get at the deadline, Gasol, DeAndre? So we answered this a little bit already. I just want to just note one more thing on this. DeMarcus Cousins is like a great idea. The problem with DeMarcus Cousins is he's just such a large presence. And I'm not even talking about off the court. Like that, the Cavs have handled characters before. Well, that's whatever. You'd have to really make him feel welcome because he's going to take up a lot of possessions. He's going to have to get posting on more. How does this affect Kevin Love? How does it affect LeBron? How does it affect Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade? This could have a very big ripple effect on your on-the-court product. It'll be something that could take some time to acclimate. That is another reason why, like, I think I'd be hesitant about a midseason deal to acquire a guy the size of Boogie Cousins. If you're saying one guy in this list for me, if it would be the easiest to just put into your team and then implement them, it'd be DeAndre Jordan, and I don't think it's close in terms of just actually being able to make them useful right away.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this. DeMarcus Cousins has a 34% usage. And you know, that's obviously on a team with Anthony Davis as well. And the only guys higher in the league in usage right now are James Harden and Kristaps Porzingis. So like you said, that's that's a ton of possessions when you're on the floor that DeMarcus Cousins is going to use. Probably involves a total change of your offense to integrate a guy like that. You see him now, he takes a lot more threes. He's way more of a pick and pop than a pick and dive guy. He wants to get the ball at the elbow and kind of face up. That's not really something that the Cavs have in their offense right now. I'm not really sure how that would look alongside Kevin Love. Whereas, like you say, a guy like DeAndre Jordan is, you know what he is. He's a pick and dive guy. He's a guy that is just going to roll to the rim. He's going to play defense, and it'd be a guy who's probably easier to integrate because he's going to use fewer possessions. And I'm sure that at some point, if the Thunder keep playing like they've been playing, obviously they played well tonight. Carmelo Anthony sat out and Paul George had 37. That some people, I'm sure, will mention Paul George as a potential target if that experiment looks like it's going south. But then you get Paul George and LeBron in the same locker room talking about L.A. together. You never know where that will go.
Yeah, that could that's every Cavs fan's worst nightmare with Dwayne Wade just kind of sitting there like, can I tag along? That's basically what's going on. Corey, and then we got the next question.
I live out there too.
Yeah, I could be in L.A. That's not a problem. You know, give me that minimum deal. Next question comes from Corey Kranick on Twitter. Mailbag question. Why does everyone hate Jeff Green? He seems to be extremely efficient and brings good energy off the bench. I'll just say this. Jeff Green has been really good. like he's been consistently effortful, and he's been pleasantly good at switching on to smaller guards, and he's done well to five. And I think like he's been better than kind of what Derek Williams was last year. Not that that's like a super high bar, but he's been good. And I think the reason people get mad about Jeff Green is that people, coaches and Doc Rivers, I'm talking mostly talking about you, like they really like think Jeff Green is this big rotation piece and is this big untapped talent, like well of talent. People, I think, if you still kind of view Jeff Green as this very outsized thing. And with Jeff Green, I think you just have to know what you're getting. And when you view him in that light and aren't expecting him to still be this talented all-star or anything like that, the returns are more palatable. I think that's just kind of it.
Yeah, I think in all of these cases, it turns into a bit of a perception versus reality thing where you'll get people who believe Jeff Green to be X when he's really Y. And I think that, you know, you can also say Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose both fit that formula where people are expecting a lot more out of them than they kind of are right now. But, you know, Jeff Green's always kind of been a guy that's underwhelmed and I think kind of strained on fan bases when he's been on their team. Just because he's not really going to cut down his usage. So when he is shooting poorly or when, you know, he's struggling on defense, I think Magic fans saw firsthand kind of what the negative side of that could be. But as you say, I mean, he's been very good so far. Obviously, the Houston game was one of his best games, I'm sure, that he's played in the NBA. And you really did see his ability to switch out under James Harden and really even just guard James Harden straight up. Harden was only 1 of 8 from the field in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that came with Jeff Green guarding him. So you do see his ability. I think that he does a little bit better against a guy like James Harden than actual, like, small traditional point guards. I thought against Dallas he kind of got blown by a bit by guys like Dennis Smith and J.J. Barea, who are, I think, quicker than Harden, but not as crafty. So I think that the mold for Green guarding smaller players is probably maybe tilting towards the stronger guys of the shooting guard build as opposed to straight point guards. But I do think that so far this year he's done well. He's shooting probably just well enough from three to – you know, make teams think about him out there. He caught Nene with a pretty solid pump fake from three the other night, got him to bite up into the air and then ended up hitting a mid-range jumper. So I do think that there will be a time where he kind of loses his shooting touch a little bit and it might be frustrating. But for now, you know, if you take him at face value, like you say, you know, he's been a solid player and one that the Cavs have sorely needed, just especially with his ability to kind of play center in those backup lineups with Tristan out.
I think he is going to be pretty important. I think getting good minutes from him and Crowder is going to be a big win for the Cavs, especially when they need to play more wings. And I think he could, if you're worried about wing depth, I think he could be someone that could help you play kids some of those concerns if he continues to do what he's doing and at least be replacement level. You don't want him to have to do more than he's doing right now. I think that's kind of the big key with Jeff Green. The last question comes from Brazil, from Tulo Reggetti. He asks, I'm going to read his full question because it is a doozy. He writes, if you had told me after the finals I would want Shump to start a PG of my team and think Green is a solid bench player, I would definitely unfollow your pod. I mean, I don't blame you anyway. And might even start a fight if I saw you in the streets. That's aggressive. But here we are. Do you think Shump should start in Rose? Should just fall out of the rotation completely? I wouldn't mess with Wade because he has been great off the bench, and that's not his role. That's his role in the future once IT comes back. It's good to have him and to get used to it, even if he might close as a starting point guard in some games. And Shump, with all his flaws, at least plays hard, can defend a little, and seems less prone to do dumb shit on offense when he plays with the starters. On bench units, it feels like he thinks he might be the best player on the floor sometimes, in reference to Shump. Thoughts? So let's break this down in one by one. Let's start Dwayne Wade, his role. Should he continue to come off the bench? And how would you say he's done so far since that move has become permanent?
Yes, he should continue to come off the bench, absolutely. I think that Wade on film, I've always said that Channing Frye on film, his minutes end up looking a lot better to me than they do when I watch the games live. And I think kind of the opposite for Wade. So I might be a little bit in the more anti-Wade camp than most, but I think that when he plays alongside LeBron at all, I just think that he's just such a drain on the spacing on the floor. One of the things I really have liked from Shump this year is I think that he's been extremely active off the ball, both as a cutter and a screener. And Wade, as a guy who really is used to having the ball in his hands a ton, just doesn't do any of that stuff. So he ends up just kind of chilling in the dunker spot. And his guy is usually in the strong side zone. So basically on the same side of the floor as LeBron, just ignoring him. And there are really a lot of opportunities for him to set some solid flare screens that would free guys. And I think we've seen Shump doing a ton of that this year. And so I hope that the Cavs are kind of showing him this stuff on film and saying, you know, if you just hit Kevin Love's guy with a flare screen right here, we're going to get a wide open three. But in terms of, his ball handling off the bench, I think that he has done a pretty decent job as a passer. His shooting has kind of come and gone. He's only shooting 40% from the field, and he's never really going to stop taking his dribble, post up, mid-range fadeaways. Sometimes they go in, more often than not they don't. But I don't think that we're ever going to eradicate those from his game.
I think Wade has been a lot better. The one thing I will say that I think you're right on that is his effort level is just kind of iffy in times, and he has to be more willing to do some of the dirty stuff if it's going to work. Like I think even against Dallas, when he didn't shoot well and he had some turnovers, I think he still at least provided some stability on the second unit that they really need. And how they figure that out moving forward will be interesting. I think, again, Kevin Love should be a part of those lineups. But I'm on Shumpert to look at him. I think we touched on this a little bit. But in your mind, should he be starting a point guard moving forward? What would you do with Shump as we look at how Rose has played it and what's to come for this team?
Yeah, like I said, I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen from Shump so far this year, especially as a starting guy. I think that the guy who wrote this question made a good point in terms of Shump just seems like he fits a little bit better as a starter because he doesn't do as much. You kind of cut down on some of his, dribble mid-range and dribbling in general when he's played with the starters. And I think that that was a pretty good point. He's up to 57% true shooting, which is above average, but also just very good for him based on the shots that he takes. And so he's actually moving the ball pretty well. And I think that it's something that helps just because he's okay on defense. He's obviously not great. He's probably less than what his reputation has been, but he's definitely better than Rose. And I think that when he's in the starting lineup, he just plays within himself a little bit more.
I agree. I think he's less willing to freelance, less kind of prone to do that. And I think he gives you something you need. He gives you some defense. He's been good on that end. He still does this thing where he dribbles in past inside the 3-point line and takes a long two. Just take the three. Like it's not a different shot, just take the shot that's worth more points.
Right.
It's not hard. I'm very curious to see what they do. I mean, I think we don't know when Rose is going to come back, and he missed the Dallas game. He says he maybe came back too early, and he hasn't exactly, like, they seem to have to adjust to him, and for someone that's making his amount of money and all that stuff, I don't think that's ideal. I think Shump makes sense starting going forward. The other problem right now is that, you don't really want to have Rose and Wade playing together. And so how do you manage that? It's not cop, yeah. Right. It just becomes like if we're just going to accept the fact that Rose is going to be in the rotation, how do you best manage that? And maybe he just has to be starting and subbing on early, and he hasn't closed games when he's played, and even that with the minutes restriction. So, I mean, we'll see. I would rather play Shump. I think the 8-man rotation is fine. You get IT back here at 9, play Channing Frye here at 10. And we'll see where this goes. But I've really liked at least what we've seen from Mon Shumpert at point guard.
I mean, it's only a 200-minute sample size, but he does have a 7.7 net rating, which is by far the best on the Cavs. So, for a team that has a negative 3.1 net rating overall on the season, to have one guy have a positive 7.7, there's definitely at least something to watch in those numbers.
Yeah, it's been good for him, I think, to kind of just – he's best – it's not a mistake that last year his best numbers were when he was with the starters. It's not a coincidence in my mind that like last year when he was starting with next to Kyrie, and in for J.R. Smith when J.R. was out with LeBron and Kevin Love and Tristan, that was when he was at his best because he was in what he does best and could be maximized in that way. It's what makes role guys better when you can accept that and do that. It's what makes guys at their best. Before we get out of here, just want to say, Patty O'Sullivan, you asked a really good question about Tristan and Greg Monroe. We are not. We kind of touched on that already. We're not gonna hit it again. But I just want to let you know that I dig your question and I appreciate you submitting it. But Mike, thank you so much for doing this. What's as we look at this week, what game are you most looking forward to as we look at the Cavs' schedule of Clippers, Knicks, Hornets?
I think that I'm most looking forward to the Knicks game. The Clippers are a bit banged up now, as I touched on a little bit earlier. Don't really know exactly what kind of squad they'll be coming out with when we get to Friday. But we do have the Knicks game. I guess it'll be tonight when the pod comes out. And, you know, with LeBron's comments of Dennis Smith that he made following the Mavs game, as well as the Cavs already losing once to the Knicks this year, and just the way that Kristaps Porzingis has played so far at an extremely high level, averaging 30 and 7 a game. Watching him is always delightful, and the Cavs don't really have a great matchup for him, so it's likely that he'll probably score a lot of points and the Cavs will kind of hit everybody else. But I think that it's kind of an early season chance for revenge, and there might be a little bit more going into it just because of LeBron talking about Dennis Smith as opposed to Frankie Smokes as being the guy for the Knicks. So that's the one that I'll be circling for this week.
Never forget that Tim Hardaway Jr. scored 34 points against the Cavs on October 29th, a Sunday in Cleveland, Ohio. That was bad. That already feels like forever ago. My game is the Hornets game. I think Kemba is amazing. Dwight Howard's been good. I think Batum's back this week as well, and that's a solid East team. And I want to see how the Cavs do. They beat Milwaukee. I thought they looked good against Houston. They beat Dallas, kind of a game that kind of I thought showed some grit on their end. This week you get a legitimately decent playoff team in the East in the Charlotte Hornets. Let's see how they handle that on national TV at home, or in the last game of a road trip, excuse me, against Kemba, a guy who, if, let's say, Derrick Rose plays. How do they handle that, and how do they handle what the Hornets are going to bring to the table in that game? But, Mike, real quick, just remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at mvagno11. On Twitter, hopefully have something in the next couple of days up at Fear the Sword, trying to keep up my basically one article a week pace. So tweet that out, and just happy to have appeared on the podcast again. Thanks for having me on twice in 1 week. So it's been a lot of fun. Always down to talk to the cast.
Mike, you have an open door policy at Locked On Cavs. But remember, go to iTunes, drop that 5-star rating and review. Enter to win the book, The Blueprint by Jason Lloyd, or the t-shirt, the mood t-shirt from Breaking Tea. I'll leave the link to the t-shirt in the show notes as well. But this has been Locked On Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow recapping Cavs Knicks, and we'll see you after the Cavs play in the Big Apple against Kristaps Porzingis and Enes Kanter and see how they handle that team.